Creative Babble.
So today, Javier, you are talking to a Las Vegas legend.
Yeah, that's right, John. I had the opportunity to sit down and talk with the former mayor of Las Vegas and legendary defense attorney, Oscar Goodman. But the reason why I spoke to Oscar was because, you know, you and I, John, have been secretly working on season 5 of Criminal Conduct this entire time. We usually take long breaks in between seasons, but this time we're going to try to roll right into the next one. And yeah, Oscar Goodman is part of season 5.
Yeah, we're heading out to Las Vegas. And I mean, this case kind of embodies everything that people love and hate about Las Vegas. You've got the night scene, you've got the exotic dancers / strippers, you've got a professional wrestling, possible murder, everything kind of tied up into one.
And don't forget the mob. And so that's why we had to sit down and talk to the man who really personifies Las Vegas, the former mayor of Las Vegas, the legendary longtime criminal defense attorney for the mob, Oscar Goodman.
Yeah, that's right. He defended a lot of famous mobsters over the years, and he just had a really tough reputation for handling some of the most ruthless and dangerous people in Las Vegas.
That's right. And as you'll hear in this interview, Oscar Goodman talks about some of his most high profile cases and some of the defendants who had ties to organized crime.
Yeah. And I just wanted to read a couple of those, the cases that Oscar Goodman was involved in. He defended Meyer Lansky, who he was a character in The Godfather. Hyman Roth was loosely based on Meyer Lansky. He was known as like the mob's accountant. He also defended Little Nicky, who became the boss of the Philly mob. And also Frank Lefty Rosenthal, who he pretty much became famous because he was the inspiration for Robert De Niro's character in Casino. And of course, he also defended Jimmy Chagra, who was accused of trying to assassinate a judge. And the crazy thing was that in many of these cases, Oscar Goodman won.
Yeah, not only did he represent all these guys, he actually won a lot of these cases. He's a living legend, and I'm so lucky that I got a chance to speak with him. And he's promoting his new podcast, which features his life story. So, John, I actually binged this podcast in one sitting. It's amazing. It's like a slice of history. It's called Mobbed Up: The Fight for Las Vegas.
Las Vegas Review Journal's longtime entertainment writer, John Katzlamidis, introduces listeners to the life of the legend Oscar Goodman in an 8-part episode series produced by the Las Vegas Review Journal in partnership with the Mob Museum. Javier recorded a Zoom interview with the former Las Vegas mayor from his restaurant, Oscar's Steakhouse.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Now I'm going to be on fire. Look at this.
What are we? Yeah, what are we drinking?
A man does not drop a drop. This is Bombay Sapphire Gin. Ooh,
my favorite, yeah.
Oh, no vermouth to mess it up. And my favorite, which gives it a terrific taste, is my jalapeno.
Oh, nice.
And we're sitting here in the restaurant named after me, Oscar's Steakhouse. And this is the way I drink the drink. I think it's called His Honor is the name of the drink. And when you drink it from here to here, it's so mellow. It's so
smooth. I love Bombay. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. But when you drink from here to here, and we'll get there before the end of the interview, from here to here, you lose all sense of touch, of feel. You begin to slur your words. It's a wonderful experience. It's a real interesting experience. So, Javier, it's a
cheers.
Pleasure.
Toast. With you. Cheers to that. That sounds delicious, actually. I'm a gin guy myself.
Forget about being delicious. This is outstanding.
So it's just gin, ice, and jalapeno. And some
beautiful.
Ice. Nice.
Ice on the side. And I love it. I mean, yeah. I love it. It's great. I wake up in the morning and I say to my wife, did we have dinner last night?
Time traveling, you know? That's great, man. Now after this call, I'm jealous. I'm gonna go make my. I have a jalapeno in the fridge, and I got a bottle of Sapphire.
You can't go wrong. You call back, and I'll give you a toast. I'll toast you all you want. I'll toast day and night.
That's right. Well, I've been looking forward to this. I've been listening to the podcast. It's amazing. It's stellar. So I can't wait to promote it.
The more I listen to it, the better I like it. I've listened to it two or three times, some of them. And every time I listen to them, to me, they get better and better.
It's a really well-crafted story. I mean, it grabs you from the beginning, right? Like from episode one, they just suck you in.
Yeah, I think so. And they're done very professionally. You fall in love with them after you hear one or two, particularly because it's a series. It's like when I was a kid, you would go to the movies. And every Saturday, your parents would drop you off at the movie theater and you go in. And there was always a series that went from week to week to week about some cowboy or other.
It's something you look forward to, right?
It was, because you followed the series. And I think this is the way that is. And I hear only good things about it. So I'm very pleased with it. And as I said, John Katsalamidis has been a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful host. And he... something when he grows up, I think he'll be able to go into this business.
I mean, you know, that transition from being a defense attorney to being the mayor of Las Vegas. I mean, to me, I just, that inflection point, that change in your career. Tell me about that. Like what inspired you to become, to run for office?
Well, I'll tell you something, the way I practice law, I really tried my jury cases with the understanding that if the jury believes what I'm saying and doesn't feel that I'm trying to pull the wool over their eyes, so many lawyers tried to do, then my client has a chance. And it's the same thing in politics. I found running for mayor, the public is very understanding. They're very forgiving. And if you look them in the eye and you tell them the truth and you shake their hand, you have their vote. So the two of them are very similar. And the reason I decided to go from being the, quote, mob lawyer, end quote, to running for office is that I tried just about every kind of case you could try as a criminal defense lawyer, representing reputed mobsters, representing a federal judge before the United States Senate, representing a fellow who was charged with assassinating a federal judge, with Woody Harrelson's father being the trigger man. Representing reputed mobsters in just about every major city in the United States, engaging in the first wiretap under the Omnibus Crime Bill back in 1970. So I did it all, and it got to a point where I wanted to do something different. I wanted to try to keep the system honest from the inside, and that's why I said I'd like to run for mayor.
During the 1970s, the infamous drug trafficker known as Jimmy Chagra was embroiled in legal battles, culminating with his arrest in 1979. He was slated to appear before Judge John H. Wood Jr., nicknamed Maximum John, for his harsh sentencing in drug cases. Chagra, facing the possibility of life without parole, allegedly offered Judge Wood a multi-million dollar bribe. When that failed, it is claimed that Chagra arranged for Judge Wood's assassination. The hitman implicated in this scheme was Charles Harrelson, who happened to be the father of actor Woody Harrelson. Although Chagra was acquitted of the murder charge, he later admitted to conspiracy in a plea deal to aid his wife. However, many credit Oscar Goodman, his defense attorney, for the shocking verdict. Goodman continued to chip away at the government's case, ultimately resulting in Chagra being acquitted.
And you know, the mayor, just this one chapter of your life, but like you said, you were this criminal defense attorney, and you even said on the podcast that you have one of the most famous closing arguments in history. I mean,
yeah, that interested me. A book came out, and it was called Great Jury Arguments. And at the back of the book, they had like a glossary of 10 of the major jury arguments, according to this author. They had my argument in the Chagra case, which I took as a real badge of honor. I think I spoke for 6 hours without an or an ah, and got my point across. It was a case that even the Attorney General of the United States at the time, William Webster, said was the crime of the century. So it was something very, very special. And I guess I rose to the occasion. We started the case in Texas, and because of certain events where people went to trial, were found guilty. I had my clients severed out, and we tried our case in Jacksonville. And the jury came back rather quickly with the severity of the charges, and they found my client not guilty.
Which was shocking to the prosecutors, right?
Not only shocking, Javier, but interestingly, they were a little arrogant. They came into the courthouse with those little plastic cups that people use at picnics, and brought in their champagne. I don't know whether they had any caviar to accompany it, and took it up to the U.S. Attorney's Office, and they were going to have a party when they got their guilty verdict and celebrate perhaps even being named a federal judge as a honorary measure because they did such a great job. Well, they were sorely disappointed because when the jury came back, I never saw such glum people in my entire life, including the judge. I'll swear as long as I live, when he saw the verdict, his hair turned from the color of yours to the color of mine, whatever hairs I have left.
Yeah. Well, but and what about you? Were you surprised at the outcome of that case?
Never surprised. I'm never surprised. I go in with the David and Goliath idea of what the trial is going to be about. It's usually me sitting with my client at one end of the room, and then the government with the agents, the FBI agents, the DEA agents, the Treasury agents, the prosecutors, the paralegals, the office staff, they all sit on the other end. And it's a very interesting tension that's created as a result of that. And I benefited from it because it fed my ego and it fed my my desire to teach them a lesson.
But what drew you to some of these cases, like the most notable cases that everybody knows you for, like Jimmy Charga, the Ant, you know, Tony the Ant, Lefty Rosenthal? I mean, what drew you?
Well, of course, I don't hire my clients; they hire me. I didn't advertise. I wasn't part of that part of the bar that liked to engage in that. I got my business from people who were satisfied with the services I rendered them or the result of the case. And then they came to me and I was able to tell them that I will try my best. I made no promises. And I just we got very, very lucky. I was winning cases that maybe I shouldn't have won. Wiretap cases, search and seizure cases. These aren't technicalities that I was winning on. These were up making sure that the other side did its job right, and the word got out that Oscar Goodman won this case, he won that case, and before I knew it, I had cases all over the country of reputed mobsters primarily, but I represented judges, I represented everybody, to be honest with you, and that's the way it's supposed to be.
But when we think about it, you know, we think about all these high profile cases, and I can't even imagine. I bet these weren't the easiest clients to work with, right?
They were. It's interesting that you say that. They needed me. I know it's a funny thing to say. Like when you go to a doctor, you need the doctor. He's the only person who's going to save you. The only person between, you know, the hospital bed in which you are and the tombstone. Which will be sitting on top of you. And I was the same way. I was the only person between a prison or the electric chair or the gas chamber. And my client remained a free person. So the burden was on me. They didn't worry about their cases. They figured that I was going to do my best. And I can't think now of anybody, even when I lost case. And any lawyer who says they haven't lost a case never tried a case, okay?
Right.
I lost cases along the way, of course. But some of my best referrals came from prison because my clients who did go to prison, they said, you know, take a shot at getting out of prison. Call my lawyer, Oscar. He'll do his best for you. Maybe he'll get lucky.
And, you know, it's funny that you say that because my impression is that these are people that don't play by the rules. These are people that try to skirt things, but your job is to play by the rules, right?
Absolutely. I was a good guy. I'm wearing the white hat, not the black hat, and everybody has it upside down. They're giving the black hats credit. But look what's happening today. Isn't it a shame what's happening in our country? You can't take anybody's word. Everybody's a liar.
Did you ever feel nervous representing any of these guys? Did you ever get into any situation where you felt uncomfortable?
No, because they needed me. So nothing was going to happen to me as a result of anything that they would do. And, you know, I joke about it, but there was a lot of truth. The FBI thought I was like a consigliere, and that if anything happened around here, they said did Oscar order it, that kind of stuff. So they were always following me. So I figured if they were competent, which they really were, I was pretty safe. But no, never for my clients. Never.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
So I want to know about Las Vegas, you know, especially around the time when you were a defense attorney, because I don't, you know, Las Vegas has gone through this metamorphosis, right? Where, you know, it's a different place today than it was. So like, tell me about that. Like just talking to you and getting your perspective on where it was and where it is now.
When my wife and I arrived here in 1964, you always remember the date that you arrived, August 28th, 1964. We had $87 between us.
Wow.
We didn't have 2 cents. We didn't have much more than that, than the $87 that we arrived with out here.
Going back to Vegas, I mean, what, you know, who were the people that lived there at the time? Like, what was it like? Because I could only think of a few cities in America that are, that have such uniqueness like Vegas. I think of Key West. Yeah. I think of Las Vegas. I think of New Orleans. You know, like, tell me, like, bring us back to that era.
Yeah, well, it's an era that will never be replicated. It's a narrow slice of the history of a city. Las Vegas is relatively young. We peg our beginning as a city to May 15th of 1905. It was a little railroad town, and they would take cattle from Los Angeles up to Salt Lake City and stop in Las Vegas because we had these natural underground springs. It remained that cowboy type town, very, very rural in effect, even though it was a little city. And all of a sudden it caught on because they had a couple of things happen. They built the dam. They had gambling was legalized only in Las Vegas at that time, or only in Nevada. So it was unique. But I didn't realize it at the time, but Las Vegas was called an open city, which meant that unlike some of the other cities that you mentioned, which had a mob presence, Las Vegas had straw men who were running the hotels as they would build them, who were semi-legitimate, and nobody knew who the true owners were. And there was a great deal of friendly competition. Interestingly, murders did not take place in Las Vegas at that time, certainly not by reputed mobsters, because there was so much attention on Las Vegas by Bobby Kennedy and that crew back in Washington that they didn't want to bring more heat, so to speak, on Las Vegas. So if you're going to kill somebody, you went to California to kill them.
Right.
He went to Arizona to kill him. The one guy I can't figure out, there was a fellow, Tony Albanese. They found his head in Las Vegas and his body in California. Hmm. So I'm not sure whether the rule was broken there. And there was very little culture, very little happening in the way of a real city developing. But we had a lot of smart people here who saw it for what it was going to become. And we were able to develop it so that we have fine medicine now with the Ruvo Brain Institute. We've got the Mob Museum, which is one of the top five museums probably in the world, a phenomenal museum. We have all the things that a great city needs. We've got the best shows in the world.
My wife, the Sphere. The Sphere looks phenomenal.
My wife, who succeeded me as the mayor because I was term limited, she went to the opening of the Sphere. She says, unbelievable. We have everything. Yeah, there's not one thing. We have hot weather. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
All the pools are about 100 degrees. So you put a couple of ice cubes If I take it from your drink and throw it in the pool, it evens out. So we have everything a human being could want. I even have in my backyard, and you won't believe this, a peacock.
Did you really?
I don't know where a peacock came from. I have no idea.
Well, we have those in Miami, where I'm from.
Well,
oh, yeah.
Peacocks, well, they poop. They
poop.
All they do is eat and poop.
And they make awful noises, like screeching noises.
Well, I don't mind this. Noises as much as the poop. He came up to the front. She came up to the front door, and we adopted her, I guess. I guess you would say that.
What do you feel like was your greatest achievement as mayor? What's the thing that you think people are going to remember you by?
Well, I'm not a legacy man, so I don't keep a scorecard on that. I think anybody who starts talking about their legacy, that they've already had it. And I think about tomorrow and the new things that I'm doing. But we had a downtown here that had no vibrancy. It was lethargic. There was no interest in it, and it was turning into rubble. Mm-hmm. And I did everything I could to make it into a lively area. And the truth be said, the Strip is wonderful. Great place, terrific shows, residences, concerts, the whole work. But there's a certain soul about downtown Las Vegas that people will just congregate to because it's organic. It's grown out of itself. And they love coming down here. They love the restaurants. They love the walking around from casino to casino. They love the crowd. They love the Fremont Street experience. It's really a remarkable place. The locals come here, and the visitors come here, and they all have a wonderful time.
Yeah, it is a one-of-a-kind place.
We were founded, unlike any other city, and this really distinguishes us, we were founded by the mob. We are distinct as far as that's concerned. I wear it almost as a badge of pride that we were able to come from the mob and build a city with culture and art and great medicine, all the things that great cities are supposed to have. And these mobsters came from backgrounds where they were looked at as outlaws. And for the most part, when they came here, they were able to engage in the day-to-day affairs of the city and become very respected citizens and contribute to the churches and the synagogues and to be very philanthropic. And it's been remarkable to sit back and watch a lot of it, which I did.
And it was, like you said, it was kind of founded by the mob, but do you feel like the mob still has a presence or a hold on Las Vegas like it used to?
No, a lot of things have taken place since, as I've said, that narrow slice of life. Age catches up with some of these fellas and they pass away or they go away. A lot of them don't want to be part of a mob, so to speak. And I don't see that kind of presence. But as far as it's a different town, because, as I said, if people wanted to do bad things, they didn't do them here. They didn't want to attract attention. And now you see these punks out there who really don't care about anybody other than their selfish selves. Who knock in, not necessarily Las Vegas, but just about every day, they knock in a jewelry store's window and stick their hand in and take the jewels out as though it's theirs and terrorize the poor person behind the counter. And
it's not organized anymore. It's like just chaos, right?
It's chaos, but it's a bad chaos because they don't care about each other. They don't care about, there's no sense of morality.
There's no rules. No.
No, it's, I like the old days better, to be honest with you. Really, this is Javier. This is our chef. He's the best.
How are you?
Hey, nice to meet you.
He is the best.
Well, we're going to be
eat here.
We're going to be going to Vegas for a story that we're working on pretty soon. I might stop by your steakhouse and check it out.
If you say I may. I'm going to go home and start drinking at home.
No, I most definitely want
to never get better. All right.
That's right. That's right. I most definitely will check out the steakhouse.
Thank you. I hope when you come out here, you give me a call.
Yeah.
And we'll get together and I'll buy you one of these.
All right.
You may have to pay for it, but yeah. I will at least order it for you.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, well, my co-host and I, John, make it out to Las Vegas. This will be our first stop for sure.
I hope so. I hope so.
Well, hey, Oscar, thank you so much for the great conversation.
It's a pleasure meeting you, and
yeah,
good luck to Brawley.
Well, it's the highlight of my week, so I appreciate it. Well, thank you so much, and have a great rest of the day, and enjoy that drink. I'm gonna go make myself one right after this.
Okay, make sure it's big.
Okay. All right, take care. Bye, Oscar. See
you. Thank you, Javier.
Bye. Take care.
Bye.
Creative Babble.